This program is presented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
This podcast series is brought to you by Emerging Infectious Diseases, often referred to simply as EID. I'm Dr. D. Peter Drottman, Editor-in-Chief. EID is an open-access, high-impact, peer-reviewed scientific journal published monthly by CDC. EID publishes articles on new and re-emerging infectious diseases that occur anywhere around the world, so as to improve the understanding of factors involved in disease emergence, control, and prevention.
Welcome to the Emerging Infectious Diseases Podcast. I'm Candace Hoffman. In this episode, we'll be discussing the article, National Surveillance of Human Ehrlichiosis Caused by Ehrlichia Ewingii, United States, 2013 to 2021, which was published in the February 2025 issue. We spoke with two authors of this paper, Sydney Adams and Dr. Johanna Salzer.
My name is Sydney Adams. I'm an ORISE fellow with the Rickettsial Zoonosis branch. I focus mainly on surveillance. I do a lot of work with ehrlichiosis and murine typhus, but I work closely with our surveillance epidemiologist on our nationally notifiable conditions. So that includes ehrlichiosis, anaplasmosis, spotted fever group rickettsioses, and Q fever.
I'm Dr. Johanna Salzer. I'm a veterinary medical officer, and I also lead the epidemiology team in the rickettsial zoonoses branch, which is within the Division of Vector-Borne Diseases, where we do surveillance of a large number of rickettsial diseases and also work on alpha-gal syndrome. So I'm a veterinarian and I have a PhD in disease ecology. I've been at CDC since 08. I've always worked on zoonotics, so mpox, anthrax, brucellosis. I've done a fair amount of global health work. Working on rickettsial disease to me is so exciting because it's adding this new element, which is the vector. So it's taking what I already loved, which were complex zoonotic diseases, and then making them even more complex when you add a vector. I also love my job because there's a number of diseases we work on that the way that you protect people is improving the lives of animals. And so specifically with Rocky Mountain spotted fever, we protect and improve the lives of dogs in order to protect and improve the lives of people, specifically children.
To start, we'll discuss the Ehrlichia bacteria that are responsible for spreading the disease ehrlichiosis.
So there's three species primarily responsible for human disease in the U.S., and that's Ehrlichia ewingii, Ehrlichia chaffeensis, and Ehrlichia muris oclarensis. Ehrlichia chaffeensis and Ehrlichia ewingii are spread through the bite of the lone star tick, or Amblyomma americanum. Ehrlichia muris oclarensis is spread through the bite of the black-legged tick, and that's Ixodes scapularis. Ixodes scapularis, or the black-legged tick, is found throughout the eastern United States, but human cases of Ehrlichia muris oclarensis have been geographically isolated to residents or travelers to Minnesota and Wisconsin. The lone star tick, which is the main vector for Ehrlichia chaffeensis and Ehrlichia ewingii, is found throughout the eastern United States and southeastern and south central United States.
Ehrlichiosis can sometimes be deadly, especially when not treated early with doxycycline, a type of antibiotic. However, the severity of disease differs depending on the species of Ehrlichia bacteria causing the illness.
So Ehrlichia chaffeensis usually results in the most severe disease. So the case fatality rate for Ehrlichia chaffeensis is about 1%. Case fatality rates for Ehrlichia chaffeensis or ehrlichiosis are highest among those less than 5 years old and over the age of 65 and individuals with weakened immune systems. Ehrlichia muris oclarensis has had no fatal cases reported, and Ehrlichia ewingii ehrlichiosis has long been thought to be less severe than Ehrlichia chaffeensis ehrlichiosis and result in less severe manifestations.
The authors of the study wanted to better understand Ehrlichia ewingii ehrlichiosis.
Ehrlichia ewingii ehrlichiosis is an emerging pathogen in the United States, and little is known about its geographic distribution and clinical presentation. So this analysis was undertaken to get a better understanding of the geographic spread of Ehrlichia ewingii ehrlichiosis and the demographic characteristics of patients infected with this pathogen.
They found that cases have increased in recent years and learned more about the demographic characteristics of the patients.
Compared to the 2008 to 2012 surveillance summary published by CDC, there was an approximately twofold increase in the average number of reported cases from 2013 to 2021. States that reported the most cases were Missouri, Arkansas, Kansas, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, Maryland, Oklahoma, Delaware, and Kentucky. And Missouri alone accounted for 48% of all reported cases. The first identified human cases of Ehrlichia wingii or ehrlichiosis back in 1999 were actually among Missouri residents, so it was first identified there. So the demographic characteristics of patients, for most of the patients, they were mostly male, mostly white, mostly non-Hispanic, and mostly older, so over the age of 65.
Missouri had the highest number of reported cases of ehrlichiosis caused by Ehrlichia ewingii, and this might be because the Lone Star tick is common there, and doctors in that state are more familiar with the disease and are testing for it more often.
Healthcare providers are probably more familiar in that state with the diagnostic methods to diagnose a person with ehrlichiosis. So I would say they're probably identifying more cases because they're using PCR more often. And they have a lot of Lone Star ticks in Missouri and a lot of Lone Star tick-associated diseases in Missouri. So why most cases are probably in that state. I think Arkansas had the second highest case count. So Missouri was number one, and then Arkansas was number two.
I think Missouri being a hotbed for Lone Star associated diseases, you know, not just ehrlichiosis, but it's also where Heartland was found as well. They appear to have a large number of alpha-gal syndrome cases as well.
During the study's reporting period, many states reported cases of Ehrlichia ewingii ehrlichiosis for the first time.
Okay, so 24 jurisdictions reported more than one case for Ehrlichia ewingii ehrlichiosis, and 15 of these states reported cases for the first time during this period, indicating increasing geographic distribution and incidence. And then the states that reported the most cases reflected 86% of all reported cases during this time period. So Missouri, Arkansas, Kansas, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, Maryland, Oklahoma, Delaware, and Kentucky made up 86% of all cases during the time period. And then, again, Missouri alone made up over 40%.
Ehrlichiosis following a tick bite might be difficult to diagnose because it shares symptoms with other diseases.
So the signs and symptoms are pretty nonspecific. They are fever, headache, myalgia, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, confusion, and headache. For Ehrlichia ewingii, so the symptoms of ehrlichiosis are pretty similar across all three species that cause human disease. Gastrointestinal symptoms like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea has been more commonly reported with infection associated with Ehrlichia chaffeensis compared to Ehrlichia ewingii, but generally, fever, headache, malaise, myalgia, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, early in illness.
These nonspecific symptoms might make it difficult for healthcare providers to recognize cases of ehrlichiosis, but there may be clues that would lead a healthcare provider to this diagnosis.
In addition to those nonspecific signs and symptoms, there are some abnormal laboratory findings that healthcare providers could look for that could maybe indicate that the patient has ehrlichiosis. So leukopenia, thrombocytopenia, and elevated hepatic transaminases. Those are key indicators that maybe a patient is infected with an Ehrlichia species causing ehrlichiosis. Timing year is also important. You know, ticks are the vector of these pathogens. So, you know, during peak tick activity months, you know, healthcare providers could have ehrlichiosis on the differential for patients presenting with these nonspecific signs and symptoms.
If a healthcare provider suspects ehrlichiosis, diagnostic testing can be performed. PCR testing, also referred to as molecular testing, is one type. Serology is another. Dr. Salzer discussed the differences between the different types of tests.
So ehrlichiosis can be very challenging to diagnose, and that is why it's important for healthcare providers to understand the different tests available and when they would maybe use one test or another or possibly both. The PCR is detecting DNA, which is one reason why you're able to differentiate between Ehrlichia ewingii, Ehrlichia chaffeensis, and Ehrlichia murus oclorensis. And so when you detect DNA through PCR, then you're able to clearly identify what species of Ehrlichia this person's infected with. With serology, we're detecting antibodies, and the antibodies are all cross-reactive. So it's impossible to say which species of Ehrlichia this person was infected with because they just have these more generic antibodies to Ehrlichia.
The timing of the test may influence which test is most helpful, as Sydney Adams explains.
So the optimal test depends on timing relative to symptom onset and the types of specimens available. So PCR on whole blood is the best method for confirming Ehrlichiosis infection. It's most sensitive within the first week of illness and within 48 hours of starting doxycycline. After 48 hours, the test isn't as sensitive or specific. Serology can't provide a species-specific result for patients, but it can be useful if, you know, the patient presents their doctor later in illness. It also requires two specimens be collected to confirm illness. So for serology, you would need to collect a serum sample within the first week of the patient's illness, and then the patient would need to return 2 to 10 weeks later after that acute sample is collected for a convalescent sample in order to confirm infection.
While serology can be useful, the authors stress the importance of molecular testing, such as PCR, to ensure accurate diagnosis.
So one of our important findings was just emphasizing the reliance on serologic testing to diagnose patients is leading to an underestimation of Ehrlichiosis cases, specifically Ehrlichia-Wingii Ehrlichiosis cases, because molecular methods are required for diagnosis. Molecular testing for Ehrlichia-Wingii is available at several commercial laboratories in the United States. So I want to make sure healthcare providers know that these tests are available, and molecular tests are the only way to provide a species-specific result for your patient. Molecular methods and PCR testing are a great way to get the patient a quick, definitive diagnosis early in illness where you don't have to return for an additional result, but they also help us on the public health side by helping us get a better understanding of the geographic distribution of these cases and a better understanding of the clinical presentation and the severity of these Ehrlichia-Wingii cases. There have been very few reported over this surveillance summary period, only 234 cases, but if more PCR testing is done, it'll help us in public health get a better understanding of the severity of this disease and a better idea of how to target our messaging. So if more PCR testing is used and we get a better idea of the actual burden of this disease, then we can target messaging to maybe groups or populations that are more at risk of severe outcomes. So if we identify that a certain population is really at risk for severe disease or fatal disease, then we can target messaging on the public health side to healthcare providers and to those populations to make sure we're preventing severe and fatal illness associated with Ehrlichiosis.
Early treatment for Ehrlichiosis can reduce the risk of severe and fatal outcomes for the patient.
So doxycycline is a treatment of choice for patients of all ages. It's usually given twice per day for 5 to 7 days and until 72 hours after fever subsides and evidence of clinical improvement. And without doxycycline treatment, Ehrlichiosis can progress to a severe and fatal illness. So it's very important that if a healthcare provider suspects that their patient has Ehrlichiosis, that they treat them with doxycycline without waiting for test results. They shouldn't withhold treatment pending test results. And even if serology, like a negative early acute serology result is negative, they should not stop treatment based on a negative serology result alone. It's very important that as soon as a healthcare provider suspects Ehrlichiosis, they prescribe doxycycline pending that test result.
CDC has resources for healthcare providers who want to learn more about Ehrlichiosis. The article discussed in this episode also offers continuing medical education.
CDC has a free continuing education module on Ehrlichiosis and anaplasmosis available to healthcare providers through CDC Train. That's online, available to anyone. We also have additional information on the CDC website.
In addition to their recommendations for clinicians, the authors also wanted to stress the importance of preventing tick bites.
You know, if a tick never bites you, then you don't have to worry about a tick-borne disease. So making sure you wear EPA registered insect repellent, you know, DEET based repellent or picaridin for your skin, and then like permethrin treated clothing.
If, however, you do get bitten by a tick, here's how to remove it.
So as soon as someone sees a tick attached, they should remove it as soon as possible by using tweezers and grabbing as close to the mouth parts as possible or other tick removal devices, making sure to get the tick as close to the mouth parts as possible and then pulling straight up.
This article sheds light on Ehrlichia-Wingii, but there is more to learn about this emerging pathogen. Sydney Adams has this advice for future researchers interested in learning more about Ehrlichia.
I think specific to Ehrlichia-Wingii, I think it would be great to expand our understanding of the clinical presentation of this disease and severity. You know, Ehrlichia chaffeensis, we know, can be very severe, but Ehrlichia wingii is still relatively new. It was just discovered in 1999, wasn't included in the surveillance case definition until 2008, and there are just very few cases. So the more research we can do to understand the clinical presentation of this disease and severity, I think will improve patient outcomes and help target messaging. So anything that we can do to further that along, I think would be beneficial.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast and that you will become a regular reader of EID like Sydney Adams and Dr. Salzer.
I regularly read emerging infectious diseases. I definitely look for articles related to our pathogens. I know there was recently, maybe a couple months ago, an article published by Ann Kintrup on the new species of Rickettsia identified out of California. So love reading things that are related to my work. I also just find new and emerging diseases very interesting. And I definitely think EID is a great resource and great publisher of those emerging infectious disease articles. We chose EID. We just thought this would be a great fit for this emerging disease. I think the readership would be very interested in this. And yeah, I just think it's a great place to put this emerging tick-borne disease.
I've been reading EID since I was in vet school in 2007. I had a professor who studied the emergence of Lyme disease in Illinois, and he would have a stack in his office and he would give me the ones that he was done reading with.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. You can read the Emerging Infectious Diseases Journal at cdc.gov/EID. You can also follow EID on X and Instagram at EID Journal, and you can find us on LinkedIn.
The conclusions, findings, and opinions expressed by authors contributing to this journal do not necessarily reflect the official position of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Public Health Service, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the author's affiliated institutions.
For the most accurate health information, visit cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO.